Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
This is a Hat Trick
podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. Every other week, I'll be posing sex questions, busting sex myths, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. But in order to do this, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as always, by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Mum, we launched the series last week with a fantastic episode all about boobs with the wonderful Jackie Adedeji. And with the new series also comes a new structure to how we're going to be doing things. We're going to interview a guest like Jackie one week, then do a deep dive on a particular topic the next before answering your questions. Your questions later in this episode are about pre-cum and anal, so stick around for that. But before that, Mum, I wanted to talk to you about something that I feel like I hear people talk about a lot. And even my friends mention it and stuff, and they'll say things like, oh, we just weren't very sexually compatible, and our sexual compatibility is really on, or it's really off. So, Mum, sexual compatibility, what is it?
Well, I wonder what they mean by that, but people do talk about this a lot, and they worry about it, and quite often it means that one person's interested in certain practices that the other one isn't interested in, or like sex more often than the other one. You have a lot of desire, or you don't have a lot of desire. You know, that's the issue.
So is it sort of like sex drive and libido plus the sorts of things that you're into?
Yeah, what you'd be into. But you see, the thing is, people talk about sexual compatibility as though it's a done deal, as though it's something that happens once and then it's there. But of course, what you're interested in, what you're into, and your desire or interest in having sex frequently changes depending on your circumstances, doesn't it? So context is very important. So, I mean, if you're really, really stressed or something like that, you might not be as interested as you used to be. I mean, one thing that's really important is that when you're in the early part of a relationship, you are full of hormones. There is no, if you're into one another, you're going to be full of hormones. And when the hormones switch off, then you may not feel as sexually compatible as you were when they were on, because that's just a thing. And we know, don't we, that some people, after about 10 years of a relationship, their desire goes altogether and they have to kind of decide to be interested in sex, or they become, or the desire arrives after they're aroused.
So
those sorts of things, I mean, that's going to affect your view of compatibility. I mean, where you might say, oh, you know, we're doing it all the time, we're so compatible. If that's what you mean, well, that's not likely to remain. That's likely to be something that changes. So compatibility is a really interesting idea. It's as if there is a, you know, you could put together that person and that person and, oh, look, they fit like a jigsaw. Well, it doesn't really work like that.
Yeah. So you'd suggest, or the stats suggest, that like that's not lasting, because the honeymoon period and the hormones will eventually die down, but also different contexts will arise and stuff like that.
Like having just had a baby, or being very busy at work, or having read about or heard about, you know, a a sexual practice that you're interested in, or thinking, gosh, I haven't done that for ages, I really want to, or suddenly questioning your sexuality and being interested in a different gender or a different kind of sex or something like that. Any of those things can happen to anybody at any time. You can't know it's going to happen.
And it will mess with your compatibility.
Could do, couldn't it?
If that happens. Do you think that, do sex therapists ever talk about this, or would you as a sex therapist go, you guys don't seem very sexually compatible to me?
Is
that
absolutely not. Right.
Yeah, yeah. So is it real then?
Well, it depends. Again, it depends what you mean. If it means we're into the same kind of things, we like sex about the same amount, we have round about the same level of desire, I suppose that's what people will probably be mean by that. But again, that can change depending on circumstances. I mean, you've only got to put on a couple of pounds, for instance, and you may not want to be taking your clothes off. You may be shy in front of your partner. So something like that could make a really big difference. Or when you've moved in together and you're not doing all the getting ready for a date and your partner comes up and gives you a hug, you may think, oh, no, I haven't had a shower. You know, and that might appear to be a lack of compatibility all of a sudden. But it isn't, is it? It's just you want to have a share.
Yeah, it's just the context. But then compatibility might change because of the things that you said in terms of, like, you might just, for whatever reason, start going off a certain sexual act that you guys used to do together, whatever. Do you think then it's grounds that, so if it can change, do you think it's grounds for either starting or ending a relationship? If you think that you're no longer sexually compatible or whatever?
I mean, there's much more to relationships than sexual compatibility. So an awful lot of people would say, well, it's very important to me, but it's not a deal breaker. And then there might be other people who would say, well, it is to me because it's about my identity. My sexual identity is so important to me that if I'm not having the kind of sex I want to be having, I don't feel like me. And so I can't be me in this relationship, if you see what I mean. So somebody could say that. But on the whole, people find ways around it. And either, you know, sometimes people have another partner. That's how they get into polyamory. Or sometimes people say, okay, well, we're done sexually, but we'll have another partner somewhere else. Or, I really, really want to do that or do this more often, but I love you and you don't want to, so I'll put up with it. You know, anything could happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I think some people think that sacrifice is the end of the world, but it doesn't have to be. You can be very comfortable with making that. And I think long-term relationships are all about compromise, really, after a while.
And it changes, it comes and goes. So you might have one partner that's not very interested in sex for a few years, and then they might become more interested in sex. And then after a while, the other partner might be very stressed or ill or something and not be very interested for a few years. Or they might both simultaneously discover a whole new way of being sexual together. Just, and you know, that this quite often happens. It's very common when the kids leave home or when people retire. So I think the most sexually adventurous people at the moment are over 50.
Really? That's very rare.
And that seems to be borne out by some of the research as well. And, you know, there was some research a couple of years ago that said for women, one of their best sexual peak was after they were 80.
What?
Yeah,
really?
So stay fit and make it to 80, yeah.
Wow. Jeez, that's incredible.
Yeah, I'm not sure how...
I was going to say.
Yeah.
but it's a one particular piece of research that suggests that. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So then basically, can you improve your sexual compatibility? Let's say a couple have said to themselves, I don't think we're very sexually compatible here. Could that improve? Could they work to improve it? Or is that really possible?
Well, I guess some of it is working out what's getting in the way. So you can do that. And a lot of people will come to sex therapy saying, can you fix me? I don't have libido, or it's gone away, or I don't like what my partner wants to do. Can you make me fixed? Can you fix me?
Yeah.
And actually, that's not about fixing that person. That's about negotiating and working out what would make things easier for both of them and what would make their sexual experiences better for both of them, less stressful, more comfortable, more desirable. And that's very, very doable. That's what sex therapists do. That's our job.
Mm. And so even the specific sexual acts, you think potentially there's ways that we can negotiate that you might eventually be into it or...
Well, you know, you've got to be, again, it's all consent based, isn't it? So you've got to be really, really careful about this. I mean, there are some sex therapists who'll say, well, it's a deal breaker. If you want to do something and your partner doesn't want to do it, then you've got to fulfill yourself. So you've got to go off and do it. I find that quite difficult because, it's kind of holding people over a barrel. So I would say if you're wanting somebody to do something, I mean, say you were into spanking or something, I don't know, and your partner had never done anything like that, I wouldn't say the moment the idea popped into your head, I'm really into spanking, I've bought some paddles, bend over. That would probably frighten them. But you might gently start stroking their bottom or something and say, I'm imagining spanking you. And they might say,
do it.
I wouldn't like that very much. I wouldn't like that.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Don't
yeah,
we won't. No, we don't like that. Or they might say, yeah, do it. Or they might say, what do you mean? Tell me more.
Dirty talk situation.
you don't know. But I wouldn't immediately jump in there with, well, I've got all the equipment, love.
Move out the way. There's a drawer there filled with all sorts of things. Okay, well then what about romantic compatibility? Is that similar, do you reckon?
No.
Is that a thing even?
Yeah.
And is that something that sex therapists or therapists would talk about?
Yeah.
Interesting. So what's that then?
So you're drawn to somebody because you see in them, unconsciously see in them, something that they hold out as a promise. So if, for instance, you had a really annoying mother who always drove you mad and was too intrusive.
Can't imagine that. Definitely can't imagine that.
And yeah, I know, it's hard to... Anyway, say you did, or an overbearing father or something like that. You might find a partner and full of all the hormones and everything, you might say, oh, so unlike my experience of men, you know, my overbearing brother and father or my intrusive mother, so unlike that. And then you get to know them, the hormones wear off and you find, my God, they're worse than dad, you know, or whatever. But what they do is they bring that, if you feel that your first go at having a relationship with your carers wasn't perfect, and none of us probably would think it was perfect, then this is our second chance at getting it right. So if, for instance, I don't know, say your dad was always out at work all day and you didn't feel very close to him, then you find another partner that's similar and you repeat the experience. And this time you try and get it right. And lots of people do. They go, they do it again. And it's a very developmental relationship. And sometimes it's so good that they don't need each other anymore. But that's why this relationship feels like it's a romantic fit, because you're really drawn to that person unconsciously. That definitely is a thing. There's no doubt about it. But some relationships are kind of anti-developmental. You can't fix it. You know, you're very angry with the other person for not meeting your needs. And so the fight just goes on and on and on and on and on for years and years and years. And those couples don't tend to separate. They tend to stay together and continue the fight because they have to, because they want to win. And so those can go on for years and years. And even after they separate, they still keep going with the fight. So they remain very, very close.
Interesting. But constantly in that uneasy struggle.
Not an easy struggle, all out war usually.
Wow. And so I'm guessing as a sex therapist and just counsellor and relationship therapist, you see that all the time. That's usually the state you see them in. That's really interesting.
Not so, always, romantic but yeah.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
I mean, one thing about romance as well is that some people have an idea in their heads of what they want their partner to do, what romantic gestures they want their partner to make, but they don't tell their partner that. They think their partner should know. And in that case, it's really, really difficult. If you buy somebody a big bunch of roses when they wanted a bottle of champagne, they'll be really angry and you won't know why. And that's quite a common dynamic as well.
Yeah. I mean, the flip side of that is sometimes people can tell you what they want all the time, which is great, but then you suddenly feel under pressure that you need to do all these things. And it suddenly becomes a thing where they're just really like, they're like, I want this, I want that, I want that.
Stage managing.
And then it becomes this whole thing where it's just like the whole relationship is for them. and they're calling all the shots, well, and you're just trying to please.
Yes, and the trouble is that you get that where people are trying to change people, they're trying to make people the ideal person that they think they want, and mm-hmm. they're paying no attention to the reality. They're just in this fantasy world, and the value of the relationship or the quality of the relationship is irrelevant, because it's just about getting these needs met, and the needs are never ever met, because as far as whack-a-mole, as fast as you push one down, up bobs another one, and yeah. they're never satisfied.
All right, I've got one more question for you on this whole thing. What star signs are sexually compatible? Because I was looking this up before about sexual compatibility to see what's up. And one of the main things that people talk about is when you type in like sexual compatibility online, half the questions are sexual compatibility star sign test, what star signs are sexually compatible? So do you ever deal with any of this in the sex therapy room of people ever asking these sorts of questions?
No. But I've just typed it in now and it's come up with what is your best sex position based on your zodiac sign?
Right.
Degree.
And I'm yes, and you know I'm a Gemini. What is
doggy style. Diggy style, doggy style.
Very good,
yeah.
Very good.
Doggy
so
style.
That's good. So basically, as a Gemini, I need to try out lots of doggy style and try and find someone else who likes that as well.
It says you can expect lots of dirty talk from these chatty and witty Geminis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Chatty and witty Geminis.
Yeah,
I like
and
that.
And it
that
says doggy style allows them to exert some of the frenetic energy that's usually channeled into their daily lives.
Frenetic energy. I haven't heard that since school.
But, you know,
so, well, come on, then.
Mr.
What are you?
Lie around on the soap. What?
Excuse me?
What am I?
Yeah, what are you?
Oh, we don't need to go into that, I don't think.
Come on, if you can't do me and then not do you. What are you? What are you actually? What star sign are you?
Pisces.
Pisces.
Something a bit fishy about that.
Nice.
Oh dear. Oh dear,
what?
Oh dear.
What is it?
Sideways straddle.
I don't even know what that is.
I'm not going to tell you either.
That's insane. And what does it say about that?
Yeah, we'll just leave that.
No frenetic energy for you?
No.
No quick and witty? Don't, no. Pisces.
It's a bit rude.
Okay. Well, one thing this podcast is known for is being, you know, very, very polite and not rude at all.
And yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Mm. All right. Well, that's sexual compatibility for now, I think. If you want us to cover a topic, please do get in touch with us on our Instagram or our Twitter. We're at RealSexEdPod, or email us podcasts@hattrick.com. We'll be back with some more of your questions right after this.
It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries.
Hello there, I have a query for Kate. I would like to know when the Real Sex Education Mailbag starts.
The Real Sex Education Mailbag starts right now.
Thank you.
Okay, Mum, we're back, and it's time to answer some of your questions that you sent to us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at RealSexEdPod, or via our email, it's podcasts@hattrick.com. And our first question goes a little something like this. My partner and I have been dating a couple of months, and I'm really happy with him. We've had a lot of sex, but recently he's told me that I'm not a real gay because I don't have anal sex. I've tried anal sex before, and I don't like it. But what if I don't do it? He won't want to date me. What should I do?
Well, do you want to date somebody who coerces you into doing something that you don't want to do?
Mm.
I'd say, really.
Yeah.
Because this could apply to anything, couldn't it? I mean, you know, people have preferences, and you may well meet a partner who doesn't like something that you like. That's very likely to happen, isn't it? And it's ridiculous to say someone's not a real gay. That's absolutely yeah. crazy. So lots of lesbian women enjoy penetrative sex, and lots of gay men don't. And it's mm. and there are just silly stereotypes about what people like.
Yeah, quite right. If you're a lesbian and you enjoy penetrative sex, that doesn't make you not a lesbian.
No, of course it doesn't.
It kind of reminds me of our pegging episode, which, to be honest, I feel like I say that every time.
You're a bit obsessed with that.
I love that episode. It's a great episode.
What?
But it reminds me of that episode because I think someone said that, like, you know, a lot of the discourse around pegging is that people are afraid that if they're straight and they like being pegged by a woman, that will make them gay, because just the act of pegging, or the act of having of being penetrated in your bum if you're a guy, is a gay act. But your sphincter doesn't have a...
But you're what?
Is that how you pronounce it? Sphincter? How do you pronounce it?
Sphincter?
Oh, right. Why did I add that? Yeah, exactly. That's like when you go out for dinner with your parents and then they just pronounce everything really properly to the waiter. They're like, Barcelona. Yes, we'd love some tapas.
When has that ever happened?
That happens. Well, listen, trust me. It happens. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, your sphincter doesn't have a sexual orientation itself.
No.
Of course not. You do. So this whole real gay thing, it sounds like a really hurtful thing to say, and it will make you, that would upset me if someone said that. So that's one thing I think is that sounds like they're trying to coerce you into it, which is a real pause for concern.
Red flag, isn't it?
Red flag. I'd look at that and think, is this the kind of person that I want to be with? Because, you know, there's going to be plenty of other people out there you'll find who also don't want to do anal sex, or they do, but they're happy not doing it with you. They don't mind.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there will be people who say, well, you should try and indulge your partner's interests. But I think it is awfully personal. You will find therapists who say that too, but I'm not one of them.
Yeah. I think like it's a two-way street. And of course you want to make your partner feel better, but also they should want to make you feel better too. So if they say, oh, I really want to do this, and you go, you know what? That for me is the line. And they go, oh, bloody hell, that's so annoying. They should in turn see you stating your line and go, oh, I want to make them happy too. If that's their line, fine. You know?
Yeah.
All right. Our next question is from Anonymous. And they say, me and my FWB, friends with benefits, had unprotected sex when we were drunk after a party. He didn't finish inside me, but I'm worried. Can I get pregnant from pre-cum?
Yes. Well, so you're more likely to get pregnant when there are a lot of sperm around. So the purpose of having so many sperm ejaculated at the same time is that they release hormones that encourage the little workers, because some of them are never going to get there. They were never meant to get there. There are only a few that can actually penetrate the ovum. So if you're thinking about that, then it's less likely that you'll get pregnant, because there are fewer sperm in the pre-cum. In theory, you can, but it's not that likely. But theoretically, and certainly there are some people who say, oh, yes, it's really likely, be careful. And I do know someone who was absolutely adamant that they got that they got pregnant by sitting in the wet patch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Just sitting in it.
Just sitting in a wet patch. So.
Wow. Sperm is incredible that they can swim from there. There's a long way to go.
Well, I don't know if it's this is what they said. I don't know. I mean, I can't prove it. I think in schools they emphasize a lot that pre-cum can get you pregnant, because there is a small danger, and so obviously you need to be aware of it. And you know, they always do say put your condom on straight away to avoid that sort of thing happening.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, I wonder whether at this point they're probably either found out they're pregnant or not.
Yeah, I mean, I would be going for a morning after pill if I was worried about it.
I guess with the morning after pill, you know, this isn't your get out of jail free card every time. I do understand that if you take that too often, that's not good news, is it?
Well, no, you shouldn't really. You shouldn't.
It's also
really
quite expensive if you do that.
I mean, you know, you should be being responsible, I suppose, people would say. On the other hand, she is very aware that of all of that, and said we had a drink,
and it was
exceptional. And that's the thing. She knows it was exceptional. She wouldn't normally do that. She's thinking about the responsible things to do. So you can't argue with that. I mean, I think this is a special occasion.
Can't knock it. Special occasion. Woohoo. Excellent. Okay. Right then. That's all we have time for today on this episode of The Real Sex Education. Thank you so much for listening. Please do keep your questions coming in. And remember, they don't need to be personal to you or something that you're going through or something like that. You can just ask Mum what she thinks about things like post-nut clarity or furries, whatever it is, whatever sort of questions you have. Please send them in. Look us up on your preferred social media to be kept up to date with everything that we're doing. We're on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, you name it, we're there. And wherever you're listening to this now, make sure you subscribe so that we can see you this time next week for some more real sex education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.